Hey, this is Jay Young with King Operating. Have you ever considered paying less money in taxes? Would you like to do what the wealthy do and invest in oil and gas? Go on our website, kingoperating.com, and get my book about our model, ADD, Acquire, Develop, and Divest, or call our number 214-420-3000 to talk to somebody today about investing in oil and gas and saving money on your taxes.
The Jay Young Show is a weekly podcast featuring insightful discussions with anyone from big business CEOs, celebrities, to military heroes. Each interview is a personal conversation about business, life, and anything in between. And now, your host, Jay Young.
Hey, everybody. Today is an exciting day with Bob Bodine. Man, I tell you, Bob Bodine in the house today. I am so excited about Bob. Bob and I have known each other for 10 years. We became affiliated with the Texas Rangers, which we'll talk about a couple of those incredible stories in a little bit. But Bob is one of the most influential people in sports. Was it somebody said, Sports Illustrated said, that he is the most influential man in sports you've never heard of. And I don't know why that nobody's ever heard of Bob Bodine, because, man, the guy is – me and my buddy John Lineberger went to lunch with Bob about 3 months ago, and he had me in tears three times from his stories about telling about the power of who, about two chairs, and just about life in general. Man, the guy is, and I mean, not necessarily tears as in laughing. He does make you laugh, but he also makes you cry. What a great guy, Bob. Welcome to the show today.
Jay, it's really an honor to do one with you. I've been looking forward to it since I've heard this show. I've seen some of your other ones. You just do an unbelievable job. It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you, Bob. Appreciate that. Bob is the father of three beautiful girls. He's got grandkids and the whole, which he'll talk about. I know he will. He'll also talk about his lovely bride, Cheryl, who I've met and traveled with, and we've been on a lot of Ranger games in the past, but Bob, you know, you are a great guy, you know, a great mentor for a lot of people. And just tell us about, and I like on this show for people that are just now trying to figure out that fork in the road of where to go. You know, should you go right or left? And tell us about the path and where you went. I know you went to SMU, and kind of give us a background story on you and where you grew up.
So my dad was a Notre Dame guy and, you know, grew up in New York, went to Notre Dame, was a chemical engineer, was a Mensa, did that. We started, I was born in Mishawaka, Indiana, right there near Notre Dame. And so my dad was like best friends with Frank Leahy, who was the head coach at Notre Dame. My dad went all 4 years to college and never lost a football game. I mean, it was just one of those dynasty years. And so grew up there a little bit, and then my dad, my mom was from Virginia, and of course, you know, they wanted, you know, we moved to California next, and so I grew up a little bit in California, and he was a McKinsey guy, consulting firm, and then had a chance to start the executive search industry, and I grew up in Chicago, and so my dad was one of the pioneers of executive search. Had a guy who was the head of human resources for Montgomery Ward, and my dad being the McKinsey, and my dad ended up being the CEO of Eastman & Bodine and kind of taking us internationally to a bunch. So my path initially kind of getting to here was to Texas, and I, you know, it was my mom looked at me and said, under no circumstances are you going to an East Coast school. And so she said, so when I went, I was going to look at Southern Methodist University. I was going to look at North Carolina. I was going to look at Virginia, maybe Duke. And my first school, having grown up in Chicago at the time, you know, I grew up and it was cold in Chicago. I mean, you could date someone and the next day they don't talk to you. And so I came to SMU and everybody is just like wildly positive. And I fell in love with Texas. And so really since 73, I've been in Texas, you know, pretty much. I had a little skirt where I, after graduation, I was a brand manager and, you know, for Carnation, which was one of the, you know, it's now Nestle's. And I was the king of spuds. I ran frozen french fries. And so I ran like a $250 million brand, learned a ton in that, had some fantastic bosses. One of my bosses was a guy named Roland Hansen, who created the name Windows for Microsoft. And so became then a longtime client. And you know, one of my other guys, you what you do is you meet these people that come into your life for a reason and a season, and people should never let these people go. So it gave me a real chance. I had great mom and dad, a couple brothers and sisters. So my sister's still my CFO of my company. And so it's been good. It's just, it's been a good life.
Wow. That's awesome. So after that, you didn't go in there because right now, I mean, your career has changed a lot since you got out, and then your dad was in the because there is no more Eastman, right?
No, he passed away. Yeah, he passed away, and my dad passed away in 2000. And so it was like 1980, and I had, you know, you come to times in your life where you're working for a company, and you're doing this, and you're working your way up the ladder, and you go from cocoa to dog food to cat food to, you know, French fries to this, and that's your kind of your career as you keep going up. And so, I don't know, I wasn't doing something that I love. Okay, I was doing it. My dad got me to come in and said, "Hey, come into this business." I was young for the business at the time, my dad was in Chicago. I was in Dallas, but Dallas was taking off in real estate, and at the time, so they were all young people doing a lot of stuff, and so it gave me a chance to get in. So I started in search in 1980. So it's just hard to believe, you know. It's 40 years, right? You
know. Wow. That is. And your dad didn't want you to get in the sports industry. He was like, "We don't do sports. We do executives," right?
So I looked at my dad one day and I said to him, "I've done about 10 years of just normal presidents and CEOs of real estate, retail, insurance, banking. We had office in Chicago, New York, LA, San Francisco, 15 countries in Europe." And so I looked at him one day and I said, "I should do what I love and what I'm really good at." And he goes, so where are you going with this?" And I said, when I do a search for like a president of a manufacturing company, at the end of the search, I get a tour of the plant. And he goes, "Yeah." And I go, "Well, if I did the head of marketing for the NBA, we get All-Star Weekend." And so he goes, "Go see if you can get that." Well, what was crazy was when you, and people who are listening to us today, I know, because I knowing you and how you think and how purposed you are, right, in life and how you go about your life, when you spurt out of your mouth what your dream is, you get to dream out loud with your friends and people. Mm. And what people a lot of times is they never say their dream out loud. It's like, "Hey, don't say that and that, da, da, da." No. You should just boldly proclaim what it is you'd love to do. And so my dad had a guy on his board, a guy named Bill Bartholomew, who was the guy who had moved the Milwaukee Braves to Atlanta. And he found Hank Aaron. He just passed away about 2 or 3 months ago. One of the big treasures of Major League Baseball. And so my dad was having lunch with him the day I'm doing this. I'm telling him this. And he says, we're having lunch, and he says, "Hey, so Bob wants to do something in sports, Bill." And so we finished, and then Bill looked at me and said, "Hey, I want to just talk to your dad for a second." And I went out of the room, and so I couldn't believe it. I came back in, and he turned and says, "Hey, Bill wants to tell you something." And I go, "What?" He says, "Why don't you do a search? We'll start something in sports. Why don't you do something with me?" And I go, "What is that?" And I did the Commissioner of Baseball search. That was my opening search, Jay. And so I did the search and placed Bud Selig. So we got a chance. For someone who wanted to go into sports, I got a chance to interview the 50 plus best people in sports. I mean, I interviewed President Bush, I interviewed Colin Powell while he's like working on his car, his Volvo, you know, and his wife's coming out, "You're not going to take the commissioner, Golan." And he'd go, "Honey, I'm talking to Bob. I want to say later that I actually was up for this job." And so,
wow.
I interviewed all these greats, you know, the president, you know, of Disney and all these great people across the world, people who ran, major, you know, Franklin Raines, who ran the Fannie Mae and all these other people, head of American Express. And so it's funny in life, you get a chance to do that. And at a very young age, I got a chance. My dad would probably have been the person who was supposed to do that. But
why did you interview President Bush?
So President Bush was really funny. It was one of these crazy things is that I had met him like in 1983, and I was doing a kind of a young Republican thing. And so we wanted to get President Reagan and Bush to come in. We couldn't get them, so we got their daughter, you know, and sons. And so one of my guys, James Huffines, he picked up, the president's daughter, and I picked up at Southwest Airlines. I'm picking up, coming from the oil fields in 83, I'm picking up George W. Bush. And I'm saying, where's your like entourage? And Cheryl and I were just married. And so he said, I ain't got no entourage. What are you talking about? And so I hosted him. We became friends. And then we had a chance to do a bunch where we would somehow, you know, kind of destiny had us be on planes to New York. And while he was very interested in the fact that I was working for my dad and he wanted to work on his dad's campaign for presidency. And so we would talk through those issues of father sons. And then one day he was the managing partner of the Texas Rangers for something. And he looked at me and he said, I just heard you got the commissioner of baseball. Get over here. And he would, he had nicknames for everyone, And so he would say, Bobby boy, listen, you got to get me that job. He says, I got to choose to go run for governor. And he says, or go for commissioner. He says, how would you beat, how would I beat Ann Richards? And so, and it was really funny. And so he was looking and he said, you got to go see if Bud will do this. And Bud was a staunch Democrat. And, I don't think he ever, but he would have been a great one. But, President of the United States, he almost made that. And so we became really great friends. And then being later on the board and him always in front of us as we were sitting there talking, and he's done it. You can't get a better person than George W. Bush or his wife, Laura. I mean, they are just, president there is just a class act.
Hey, so Bob, so you interviewed President Bush. I mean, you got, all these people, and you decided to go from the executive search to sports is what you love. And so how many years of that did you do before you wrote the book, The Power of Who? We got to talk about The Power of Who.
Yeah.
And 2 years and talk about the Rangers. And we got a lot of things to do here. So
that's good.
Tell me about how long was it before you wrote the book, and how important are people to you?
Yeah. So when all this time, it was really great. I got in 84, I got my dad to move from Chicago to set up headquarters in Dallas so I could be with my dad. One of the things I quickly found is that, and I think people around the country should always find is if you're going to have a job, you want to have a great mentor. You got to have somebody you can look up to who really knew it. And so my statement to my dad was, and my mom wanted out of Chicago. And so it was a great opportunity for them to come. And I really get mentored by someone. So from 1984 all the way through to when my dad passed away in like 2000, my dad was on his deathbed. And he says to me out of nowhere, and of course, I wouldn't know if he's on his deathbed, right? Because I don't believe my dad was Superman. So there's no chance he's going to like pass away. But he's there and he says to me, so Bob, we're just sitting talking. He says, so Bob, after you finished your fifth book, and he started to say something, I couldn't hear anymore because I laughed out loud. I mean, I can't write a memo. What are you talking about? And my dad was a writer. Okay. My dad was a contributing, editor to the Manager's Journal for the Wall Street Journal. It was one of those things that everybody would look in and try to find what new wisdom someone's saying from an executive search standpoint about a field and industry. And so he planted in me and he said, no, you've been saying something for a long, long time. And, it was like, it started to get to me is that there was a difference between acquaintances and friends. And so, as I kind of grew up in this business, you make some flaws occasionally, right? And you kind of chase business and you chase a bunch of stuff and you're busy and time's your enemy. But I always tell people, but timing's your best friend. And so it's a paradigm. And so if you spend time with the right people, you're mentored by the right people. And so after that, I spent 4 or 5 years, and it took until there was the downturn of really like, I started to think about the book, and then I really wrote the book big during the time of the 2008 and 2009 when everything started to go down. And then, so that was a chance for me to really help people. Right. And
right,
so,
right.
So my dad's thought always was that he saw the way I interviewed people during the executive search that I wasn't doing it transactionally. I was trying to do it transformationally, that there was, and that, transactional is one dimensional. And so we're just in it for the deal, not the relationship. And so when I meet people, my dad's philosophy on life was, you know, especially when you think of chemical engineer, you know, Notre Dame, Mensa, you're thinking, okay, what he's about to tell you is going to be real technical. But his concept that I want to tell people to be thinking about now as we come out of this pandemic, obviously, is that you're supposed to be doing jobs you love with people you love, in a place you love, where your family loves it, and you get to do it for the right reasons. And my dad's thought was, go make friends. Help your friends in every way possible. But don't be surprised if you do a lot of business with your friends. And so that's kind of the opposite way the world works, because we've been told for years and been lied, and that's the concept of this power. We've been lied. College kids who graduated now had this time period. You've been lied to about what? Friends in business are not taboo. So they've been taught, don't ask your mom and dad. Don't go out to your Uncle Bill and try to get an intro to something. So let me get this correct. We're supposed to do a lot of business with a bunch of strangers. And so this is stupid. And so your mom and dad aren't going to do your job for you. You're going to have to do it. But right. If you take a job without a mentor, then you're going to cubicle number 6. And then when you're 46, you're in cubicle number 11. And you look like the guy in the office where he's got all the stuff and pens and all the stuff, and he's totally disheveled, and his whole life is like in the dumpster. Don't go there. Listen, what if you were given specific people in your life to help you in ways you never even imagined? What if those people were specifically giving you, help you find that place in life you always dreamed about? They want to hear your dream. What if we're missing destiny? What if doing what we love and helping our mom get into the right hospital and getting that job we want isn't about who we don't know, but whom we've neglected, our friends. Friends are the key. But there's a big difference, as you know, Jay, with friends and acquaintances. Friends help you now. Acquaintances wish you well.
Right.
You know.
Good point.
Friends know the song in your heart. And they can sing it back to you when you've forgotten the words.
Right.
Have friends do something for you that mere acquaintances wouldn't even consider doing. And so listen, we're supposed to be doing life with our friends. Now, a lot of people say, well, I had this friend and they didn't help me in my time. They weren't your friend. I mean, they were an acquaintance. I mean, people are just trying to find a new networking tool for the power of who. So when I wrote The Power of Who, I didn't call it The Power of Friendship. I said, because you got 5,365 people on your Facebook that are your friends. And so that's ridiculous. And so friendship is intimate. It's personal. And so when my dad said, help your friends in every way possible, well, that's every way. But we're not talking about just any friends. So if you had one friend, your grandfather told you you were blessed. If you had three, you're rich. Mm. If you had 12, well, holy cow, Jesus had 12 friends, 3 close, 1 best. Everyone knows who he is. 2,000 years later, he's still signing recruits, still doing deals.
That's a good point. What I saw one of your interviews on the Today Show or something where they're talking about the power of who, and you just stunned them. I mean,
yeah.
They're like, what? I mean, you don't have friends, you only got, it's like, man, it was just so great that you came across so strong. And it was just so different from what everybody else believed.
No, I think people today have been taught that, you start your life with people and you have all these friends. You then immediately go out into the business world. And of course, all your friends are gone. And now you have people knifing you in the back and everyone's playing politics and you can't talk about some specific things. You have no mentors. You're waiting in this thing. And so what you do is you day trade your life, and then it becomes technical and all the stuff and process and systems. And I'm number of something here. And then you're doing it. And then you're traveling 183 days on the road and you're doing all this stuff so that at some point I get to do what I love. The only problem is I got bad news. They keep moving the goalposts. Right. You got to do what you love now with people you love. And so in a place you love, success is geographical. I mean, so you live your whole life to get 2 weeks a year in some great place. Well, I don't know. I wrote in one of my stories in The Power of Who is, yeah, well, go start your canoe company where you want to be. Stop eating, drink, you know, smelling in all the normal office air and looking out at freeways and stuff. And you're never happy and you never hug your wife anymore. I mean, the whole world here is like stuck in a zone now that says like, hey, I can no longer have friends. I can't hug you. I can't high five you. I'm going to have be social distance from you. I laugh in our office, they're now putting in all this stuff so that when everybody comes back, and so they have these little circles in an elevator, and they're gonna have two spots, and when they have one in one corner and one in the other. And then when I got in again, somebody had taken the two circles and put them right next to each other. and of course, people.
Not Bob Odin.
Exactly.
No, Bob Odin did that.
I just said, hey, I'm revolting.
That's great. But, you found a way that not only starting with your dad, executive search, doing this. You told me the stats not long ago about how many coaches and how many athletic, yeah. All that. I mean, there's, and you're making a great living off of doing what you love.
So one of the things is this, is that if you go out of your way to connect and serve and love people, right? You go out of your way to figure out how I can be a solution for other people, that it's not about you, and you just serve them and love them and just want them to do so great. And the answer is, you know, hey, out of nowhere, hey, so we do all the work in all these aspects for, you know, professional teams and presidents of teams and chief business officers. We place 54 of the 100 athletic directors in the country. We've done 85 head coaches. We do still, you know, 30% of our stuff in business. And so, you know, one of the things I try to tell people is when you do what you love, there is something that happens that creates less bureaucracy. You have people. So I have a network of people, and we created this strategy called the 100-40 strategy, that in your life, if you're the greatest network in the world, you could get about 100 people who would help you get things in all you do. And then you would identify 40 jobs that you want to do in oil and gas, or you want to do over here, and somebody wants to do in real estate. And then what I do is I get my 100, I tell them specifically my 40. They not only help me get it, okay, one of them knows people, because the premise of the Power of Who is you already know everyone you need to know. So it's a shocker to people that actually people, the thing that you have that God wrote on your heart, he's then opened up and he gave you those as friends. You just don't see your friends and family as a resource and a conduit to your success. And that's a big mistake. So we go off to a bunch of people, you know, like we're George Bailey and It's a Wonderful Life. And we go out and ask the Mr. Potters of the world, like they're going to help us. They're not going to help you. And so, and then when trouble comes and then the whole show finishes, who's there to help George? The people he had already always in his life. They were always there. And then his brother and all this stuff to George Bailey, who's rich. Rich with what? Friends. So in life, what good would it be if you spent a whole life doing a bunch of stuff with a bunch of people you don't like?
Right.
I mean, when you're around people you love, when I'm around you, I juice up. I feel better about who I am. You know, it's, you got to do life with the people you love.
That's great. I agree. And I appreciate you saying that. I feel the same way with you, Bob. I mean, it's been a great relationship, and I just love being around you because it just inspires me. And you know, the one thing, you know, we met, you know, back in one of the Rangers deals, and I said, hey, who are you, or what do you do, or what, you know.
Right.
The normal introduction, and you said, Bob O'Dean, I just wrote a book called The Power of Who. I just finished my workbook. I'll send it to you. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, and then I started reading it, and I was like, wow, this is good stuff. But I said, do I really have that many friends? So you're not, and if I'm just getting out of college, you're not really saying that I have that many friends. But if I could latch on to a Bob O'Dean, I mean, it just go, wow, hey, man, there is a ton of people that he knows that if he likes me and he knows where I'm going, you know, Bob will definitely mentor me, and you could open up your book. So it's not necessarily you having those people. It's
no. So what I did was I really chased business. And so it really, the reason I wrote it was, especially when it came to a point, is that I'd see people all sending out mass emails and sending out, "Dear sir, I get 52,000 resumes a year. Dear sir, to whom it may concern, dear recruiter." I've never placed somebody from a resume, ever. Why? Because what kids need to understand, and what people who are now coming out of the pandemic, what if I told you the four things that people are thinking about when you walk into their office? It would be like me telling you the answers to the test before the test. Okay? And so
awesome.
It's just awesome. So here they are. The first thing they think, "Do I know you?" Now, this is just unbelievable. So who's the person that got you in my, why are you in my office? And so, but if I had Jay, okay, introduce his best friend to me, this guy's already liking me. He's already in this, my conversation, and he knows it. So if you have someone who's a friend, now I'm not talking, so friends, when people talk about friends and acquaintances, a friend is someone who's been to my house and had a barbecue. They know Cheryl. They've gone to dinner. We talk about each other. We acknowledge that we're actually kind of similar. There's a lot of people who don't like it. They're from a different planet. I don't care. You're only supposed to be around some people who dig us. They like our voice. They like our jokes. Other people, I don't know. They're moving on. So do I know you? That's the first thing. You have an 87% chance of getting the deal done or getting the job if you have one person who's introducing you, who's an impact person to that person. Okay. I don't know that people should be thinking right off the bat. 87, 13. Wow. So now, the second question. These are really complex. Do I like you? Okay. If you would talk and you would sit there and I introduce you to one of my really great friends and you're trying to do a deal with this person and you would now sit and trash me with him because he both would enjoy talking about how crazy Bob Bodine is. That he's, what is he like, this positive nut? I mean, he's like, what is this? And then you do that. They would sit and have fun with the conversation because you both love me. And so that all of a sudden changes. And now interviews are over in 5 minutes. People think that this, like, listen, I can tell based on the energy and the love that you have, I can tell in the first 5 minutes whether you have it. And the reason is you walk in with this personal environment that all of a sudden feels confident. And of course, what would make you more confident if you already know the person's best friend, okay, and he already loves this person and he immediately likes you? Now we move to question three. So now what's the percentage if all of a sudden they know and then move to like you? You're at 94% chance of getting the deal done. Versus six. Wow. So listen, just so you know, if talent was the reason everyone got jobs, then how do we have Congress and Senate? No, these people got who?
Oh, yeah.
So we move, know you, like you. And the next thing is, what is it? Do you understand my needs? So now what happens in a conversation naturally is you want to come in and do this and you want to sit and talk. And then you immediately go in and they say, hey, let's talk. Let me tell you what I'm trying to work on here and tell me if you know anything. And then you get to talk about their needs. And then the last question is, are you the best for me? Now you get to talk about being why you can help them. And so now, so none of your friends are introducing some total zero to a process. So that person, your best friend, if I'm introducing you, I already know you're awesome at what you do. And so my friend's going to do it. And I'm just going to set and tee this up so that you can all of a sudden get to understand his needs and tell him why you're the best. And he'd love to be it. And so that's the way this all works. Here's the way the world works. Just stop there. They don't do this. What I just said, know you, like you, understand needs best. Here's what they do. They invert it. They walk in and what they've been taught in college, at masterminds, at conferences of networking, where you and I sit and they say, hey, I need you to know, you know, you need to know Jay, you know Bob, well, why don't you stick a pencil in my eye? I mean, I hate networking meetings. Who would like to go to this? This is like terrible. So what they do is they invert it. Here's what they do. I'm the best. That's what they sell. So let me, so hold a second. Didn't you see my resume on LinkedIn? No, I didn't see that. And so they have no contact of why we're having the meeting. I'm just going to immediately come in my opener and say, I'm the best. Then I'm going to say, I understand your needs. Listen, does Michelle let another man understand her needs if she didn't know him?
No.
So this is stupid stuff. The answer is then, hey, we're going to get to three. You're going to like me. At some point, you'll get to know me.
Right.
Leave my office. Right. That's what people do. Leave my office. And so today, if you're out of a job, if you're all of a sudden starting to panic in this, listen, what if I told you already know some people and I could teach you in a power of who that God gave you some specific people to help you and that you have to humble yourself to ask for help. That's what people don't like to do. And so the answer is, yeah, see how it works alone. See how you'd like to go out and send yours along with 600 other people. But what if I told you, you knew one person who was already his friend, and if he recommended you, why does this work? Because references, endorsements, and testimonials are all your greatest allies. And when you toot your own horn, no one likes that. No one likes that. So, but if somebody else says you're great, if I tell someone that Jay's great, you know what they know? He's great. Yeah. Because I told them to. And so the power of who is if I tell my friends to like you. So you don't need a bunch of new who. You got to go first connect with your own who. You need to go back into your family and your friends that you were given in life. Because if you had 100 friends and they had 100 friends, they don't have 200 friends. They got 10,000. It's right. Not one-dimensional. People see their buddy as one-dimensional. So anything times one is the same number. So you lose out on all the value of growth. But he's not one-dimensional. He has friends. How do you know his brother isn't the CEO of the company you want to join? You never asked him. So these are simple. These are such simple concepts. And I wish I was that smart to be able to come up with something so wildly good. I just can't believe that everybody's still buying onto, you know, march this way, go over here, do this, as if we're going to really, I don't know. I don't want that life. I'd like to do what I love.
That's great. I mean, it's great that you've done the power of who, and I mean, you made a great living off of it. And I've been to your, you just a huge success based on having fun. You're always in a great mood. You're always up and you're always, because man, you're making money doing something that you love instead of.
I get to talk to you.
Yeah. So, Bob, I know that you're very, very, and I mean, somebody asked me yesterday, I was playing golf, and they were like, hey, what do you think about the National Hockey League and the Major League Baseball? And I said, man, it wears me out trying to think about how they're going to finish the season right now because it changes and it's all over the place and what's going to happen. But what do you think is going to happen to the 2020 season? Or for hockey or baseball and basketball. Baseball hasn't started or started, but that's a little bit back behind. They haven't even finished hockey and basketball.
Right.
What are your thoughts about hockey and basketball and then baseball and football coming up?
So in times of uncertainty, everybody's just like, you know, we got lots of committees, which you and I both know as soon as we get lots of committees, we're never coming up with any answers. And we're going to just create lots of questions, you know, that keep going and creates more, you know, thoughts of uncertainty and worry. So, initially is that right off the bat, like racing starting, right? They're going to race and golf is coming out. And people are going to start to, get initially without fans initially, maybe with some fans, you know, they're going to do some aspects. So the short term facet here for all sports is first and foremost is that people are not going to want to risk, you know, getting in lines, okay, and doing something unless they have some premium product that they're doing. So if I'm in a suite, if I got really great seats, the question is, you can pretty much expect that we're going to have tests where we do a tongue or we taste something and we're going to see whether we have this or we're going to do thermometers and someone just like as if you're doing your purse, you're going through lines like your purse, but it will be just a little bit further out and people come up, do the thing and you're either in or you're out, right? And they won't let you in. But would you go through, I mean, to a degree, you and I both know that going to a Dallas Cowboy game is a premium product now. It's cost a lot of money. And right, so, right. But what they're going to find, because sports isn't going away, it's who we are as people. We love sports. We love community. We love high-fiving people and teams and leadership and all the things. So that ain't ever going away. And so it's all going to get – it's going to be good. But what you're going to find is that they're going to do some testing here shortly that looks at a stadium. I went to the NBA All-Star game this year, just, you know, and just before all of a sudden this, all this stuff happened. And they do a thing called a technology summit. And Adam Silver was rolling out something that when you would watch this little, and he showed a little screen that he throws up on the screen of a little game. And then now they could open it up and it goes across the whole front of the entire, aspect of the wall in front of us. It was huge. And then here's another thing, and it comes down to size. And we could be like, you and I could be sitting in one of your, like, you know, in your house, and we could like feel like we're on the court. And so I believe technology is going to play a big role now in getting us better seats at games where we're at our house and we don't have to go park. Yeah. And we bring our friends over and we can still feel the excitement. And we're just going to see some other technology things that we have a chance to do. And then as they start to build the fact of safety and all the stuff back, well, we're not going to start the thing. It's got to create more opportunities. And it's going to create, obviously, more opportunities for sports betting apps. It's going to create more opportunity for other games, for people are doing, and other concepts of how we're listening to other people tell us and get us ready for the games and be part of the community. Like there's currently a thing called the Caddy Network, which is really cool. And it's going to, and all the caddies are going to tell you their insights because they're caddies with their guys in golf. And so you can all of a sudden get insights, and then all of a sudden that would play a factor. And so we now, like I just saw the other day, you know, Jim Nance and Phil Mickelson kind of reenacting one of the Masters win because the Masters went on. But just seeing the two of them sitting talking about it creates a different type of product. We're going to have more of that product. Games are going to be played. I just saw one of my friends. We did a lot of work for the Miami Dolphins, and Tom Garfinkel, who's the CEO, just came out and showed a route this past week where he said that, you know, probably X percent of the stadium's going to be filled. Okay. Only this amount. We're going to have social distancing, and then they're going to, and everyone's going to be done. But somehow, you know, we're going to get testing. You know, they're working on vaccines now. There's always things going on behind the scenes that people don't really know. We're the most creative country. We have people who are coming up with stuff every single day. That's what we do in times of trouble. With God's grace, we come up with ideas and thoughts. And so every trouble is an opportunity in disguise. And I think, you know, every person whose their business seemed to be going away, well, you're going to get a better idea on a business really that you finally get a chance, because you never would have left that crappy job. And now you get a chance to do what you love with people you love. And so once they can get community to whom they do, and then we'll think of new ideas, there's hundreds of new businesses around sports that we've never even thought of doing yet. And it just creates a whole new industry of opportunity. And so I don't know. I'm very optimistic.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's going to be really – I mean, because there's so much money in everything. It's like stars and all the jerseys they sell and the people and the – I mean, there is just so much money. And we saw with the Rangers. I mean, how many people go to all the Ranger games? There's 80 games here, 81 games locally. They just built that huge stadium out there. Me and Bob are no longer involved with the Rangers, but you know, they've built a huge
– beautiful.
Texas. Oh, my God.
People are going to love going there. This stadium has been built specifically in mind for better social distancing. They got better hallways. It's wider. It's better going to the restrooms. When you look out and you're watching the game, you're no longer just sitting in a spot where you can't see currently the game. You'll see the game and do the other while you're sitting there. And what they'll do in the future is you'll be at your seat, and what we see in premium seating where someone comes by and asks you what you want, they'll be doing that all over the place where people have an app, and then you go up and just pick up your thing at the food counter. And when people leave, they're going to have people do it like a church. And the following people get out first, the next people, and you know, they're going to do that until we get back to normal. But we found in retail, when retail started going really down, that what happened, the change in the whole industry was influencers. Okay, so influencers dominate retail. They have each major influencer on Instagram has a million people following them and buying product. And so people are going to do that same thing in sports, and they're not going to have less jerseys for the great players that we have. And our kids aren't going to grow up with something less. Their kids are going to be you know, earlier. I mean, if you look at Amazon, I think this is the funniest thing. If you look at an Amazon right now, so Amazon's all, you know, the market went huge down. Amazon's already way above its ever high ever. And the reason is that all the 50-year-olds plus 50, 60, 70, and 80-year-olds who never used Amazon now were sitting forced to come home, and now they know how to use it. And they're spending. They're just spending money. So it's funny. And so we find ways to create new ways to do things. And so if I know anything, Ray Davis is optimistic about getting all the fans back in a safe way in this beautiful stadium outside Texas Live. I mean, it's going to be monumental. And we're going to play some baseball. We are going to play some football. We're all going to do all this.
Right, right. And I don't ask you what you think. And is it opening day July 4th or is it July, August? I mean, because, I mean, nobody knows. And I mean, there was some positive things that happened yesterday, and there were some negative things that happened yesterday. Yeah. I mean, you just don't know. And
well, we're going to find, because one of the things I know always, and one of the optimistic things is anytime you're moving towards an election, people are moving, you know, yours and everything else faster at points of things that ever possibly they ever could.
I agree. I definitely agree. All right. So, Bob, what I want to do, if you don't mind, I mean, what I'd like to do is I'd like to have one or two of your, not your favorite, because I'm going to ask you on the next show. We're going to do a two-part series. Bob Bodine, you're just so incredible. And there's so many different facets of your life that I want to make sure that the listeners hear, whether it be the power of who, the create church. And I want to talk about that with Dr. Binkley and Ryan Binkley. I want to talk about two chairs. We need to talk about some of, because a lot of people will love to hear some of our stories about the Rangers and things going on there. And I'll tell you some of my favorite stories as well.
Yeah.
So just tell me one or two of your favorite stories, Ranger stories, but save some in the tank for next time. We're going to do a two-part series. So one or two of your favorite stories now, and then I'm going to wrap up this show, and then we're going to do a second part next time. So what are your favorite one or two?
You know, I think one of the things maybe to start is that how I even got to the Rangers, right? And so
– Oh, good so story. That's a great story.
It's just a great story is that you know, there are some people come into your life for a reason and a season. You just don't know it. And some people, they leave quickly, and other people stay and forge a relationship with you that stands, you know, a test of time. And people – have to be aware, who are listening, that every story you and I tell is a story about their life. And it's not just about my life. Is you who are listening or watching are feeling that, hey, maybe you don't have the who. No, you do. You have people in your life that were given there. And if you would just go out of your way to be, if you want friends, you've got to be one, and you got to go and see how you can help people. And so when I started back, I've known Ray Davis, you know, since I was 19.
Wow.
I mean, Ray was, you know, my dad used to know Ray because my dad did search work and had Ray as a candidate, and he used to be at Colt Industries. And when, by the time I got around and did my first search I did was with Ray Davis in Longview, Texas for a plant manager.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. And so, I mean, who would have ever known? I mean, I never would have ever, you know, you never think these thoughts about what happens years ahead and why you start. I just know that
30 years later, he ends up being
the owner of the Rangers
and brings you in on the board. And
crazy. I mean, what's the odds? And so the answer is that, but here's what is a common theme all the way through. Yeah, I know, but I loved Ray Davis. I mean, he was a man of great integrity and character and treated you great, and he ran a great company, smarter than smart. And so when he moved and did stuff, I did work for him at Holley Carburetor in Detroit and did, you know, 15 assignments for him there. I think I've done 40 assignments with him over the years. And then after my dad passed away, who's at my dad's, you know, funeral and me doing the thing? Ray Davis is there. And, you know, he just – he wouldn't miss a moment. I, you know, outside of, you know, my dad, I call him on his birthdays. I try to touch him because I just, you know, I just love the man. And so what happens is that he left, he left Colt, he got into private equity, he started doing some things. And then we would, one of the things we never stopped doing was having a breakfast. People give up their breakfasts. Why would you give up a breakfast or a lunch with someone and just say, hey, how are you doing and all this? And so I just never do that with people, the people in my life. And I guess that's what's, you know, the mainstay. And it's not hard just to say, hey, what are you doing? How are you doing? You want to have, let's have lunch. You know, I don't know what's harder than that. And then over a period of time, you get to know people, you get to know their family, you get to help their kids. You know, I want to, if I'm doing something, I want to help every one of your daughters and every one of your situations that you got. I mean, friendship to me is I'm all in on every of that. And so slowly but surely, Ray and I, you know, we just built like this such a friendship. And then, you know, all of a sudden he went in the oil and gas industry, and I helped him do a chief financial officer on one of those searches and business and, you know, and all of this. And then one day he, all of a sudden, he's asking me about, you know, about the Rangers, and I'm giving him thoughts because I'm doing so much in sports, and I'm telling him the ups and downs and all the things, and I've done work for baseball and this. And then all of one day he calls me and says, hey, you know, you got a moment? And I said, sure. And he goes, you know, listen, I'd like to ask you something. And I said, so I went in my office and I'm listening to him on the phone, and he says, look, I'd really like you to be on my board. And I said, you know, Energy Transfer, the oil and gas company? And he goes, no, the Rangers.
Oh, like, my God.
And he says, your dad would really like this. And he says, I couldn't think of somebody. And so I thought to myself, you know, it was like, you know, God's just really good. I mean, so it was a great chance. I had a chance to help the Rangers and bring in Rick George, you know, the president of the, you know, as the president, and Todd Taylor as the head of tickets, and Joe Januszewski and some various people, right? You get a chance to do that. But which played a big factor in all the stuff that we did very successfully. So I got to match a little bit of some of the stuff I did in my business. And then I get a chance to meet all these fantastic people on the board and all the people who are a part of ownership who, you know, in this process. And of course, that's what you were. And of course, you know, I was just the guy over here, the power of who.
Now, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, what a great job. Rick George, Januszewski, I mean, those guys are just world class.
Todd Taylor now is the head of all business for, you know, runs all business for Indiana Pacers, the best ticket guy in the country. And so we just were able to bring some people that were difference makers. They're all great. One thing, quality. They all have that same great quality that Ray would want, because that's what Ray always said is, listen, have you got someone really special for me that can really be a difference maker and is quality human being and really good at what they do? And of course, that's what in search, the real issue in search is that I always believe I can find you that one person, right, who you love, plus they are just in it for people and they know how to just take this company through the roof. And so, you know, I like trouble situations, you know, when everything's gone wrong, and then we could bring that one person. That's why, I mean, I don't like executive search, and after now doing it 40 years, I love it. And I mean, it's not like, I mean, it's just something. And so to be able to do it is such an honoring thing for someone, whether it's for a university or for a CEO in a business. And that's just why I've been in it. That's how you can't sustain this business. It's the highest mortality rate of any business, because everybody thinks, hey, I got a phone, I could be an executive recruiter. Yeah, they just can't sustain it, right? Because they don't love it.
Right, right. Well, I'll tell you, Bob, and I'm going to wrap this thing up so we can get back to the deal. And I've got my favorite Ray Davis story. But I'll include on the next episode. But one thing that I really do admire about you is not only your love for business and the power of who and all that, but your wife and your kids. Man, what a love that you have for Cheryl. And you guys are always laughing together. You're always having a good time. And I met your daughters and their husbands and things. I mean, you know, how do you do it? How do you stay so much in love? Not that I'm not in love with Michelle, and let's all go there, but I'm just saying, I mean, I've got my ways about, and you too. You probably love Cheryl more right now than you ever have in your life.
I do. And so I'm the luckiest person. So we've been married 37 years. I did a talk the other day about change and a subject. And I said, you probably don't think I changed much since I've been married to the same person for 37 years. I'm in the same job for 40 years and I'm in the same house for the last 34. And so I said, but none of it's the same. One of the things that the most important aspect in life is doing life with your best friend. And so, you know, a lot of people have made the mistake. One of the great things that God said in the Bible was that there's no greater love than to lay your life down for a friend. So the greater love isn't just marriage, because 60% of the country today is having trouble in that aspect. The greater love is, it couldn't be greater love from God if we eliminated single people, widows or widowers, right? So the greater love is friendship, okay? And so a lot of people have put categories on their wives over here, but my wife's is my number one who. And so she and I talk about business, we talk about life, we laugh. I mean, she's so much, you know, to get along with me, you got to be really easygoing. she, if I said to her, hey, so what do you think about doing this? Okay, let's go. And I just, you know, it's just like, hey, you know, hey, you know, because I'm just, you know, up and down and da da da. And then when you write books like Power Who or Two Chairs, you know, there's a lot of times maybe you could live in a house where you're not loved in your own country. but, you know, like you're being too positive. But, she's a really positive person, and she's came up and grew up in like West Texas and all that kind of stuff. And she's a barrel racer and she can do all this, but you never know it. Right. You never know any of that stuff. And then I got three amazing daughters. I mean, my oldest daughter is just a star. She's an Instagram influencer. She's got 300,000 plus people follow her. And she just, her life was not going in the direction she wanted. And then she just really started to do what we'll talk about in the next, you know, phase of our conversation, Two Chairs. And then God just gave her some new stuff that I believe he's going to give every single person who listens. He'll give you the dream. He'll remind you of the dream. And then, you know, if you Zig Ziglar, you say, if you want to, you know, you don't have to be great to start, but you got to start to be great. And then she just took something just based on loving and helping people. And she turned it into a boom. And my middle daughter, Jenny, she's just unbelievable. So she's a teacher in Frisco, Texas, and does yearbook and reads, you know, and she's just fantastic. And she's a photographer. That's her real, she loves that. And then my youngest daughter, Rachel, who you know really well. And so Rachel's like, she was in Circuit of America. She did Formula One racing and now is in real estate, and she's a tiger. And so I hope she listens to this because I want her to work for me. In the future, but she loves Austin. She's doing she's just kicking it for this company, and she helps people, you know, big real estate people do concierge. And so she does concierge for all of those. And so it's kind of fun. It's just amazing. All three of my daughters are totally different, and you never treat them the same. But, you know, I always tell, I send out a note and I say, hey, did I tell you today that I love you? And my oldest daughter, she'll come back and say, oh, daddy, I love you. And my middle daughter say, you just did. My youngest says, no, you didn't call me.
So you don't text them all on a group text?
I never do anything. You got to do everything individual, you know, individual. You got to tell you, listen, with girls, you got to help them dream out loud. You got to love on them. Got to tell them how fantastically beautiful and how amazing they are, that they're one of a kind. I really believe that people have messed up in the zone of just having a chance just to love on your kids. You know, there's no such thing in my mind as constructive criticism. Because after you got the seventh positive, you're waiting for the hammer.
Right,
and
right.
So, you know, I think we all got to find what you do best. And then I have to encourage and love you and push you to go for it and risk it. And so, Listen, hey, you know, I think people who spend time with avoiding mistakes, like as if we could do that, it's just a big mistake. No, we got to keep going. We got to go for that. We got to go for gusto here.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
We're at the perfect time.
We're at the perfect time. And we're also going to conclude this section, Derek and Kim. We're going to conclude this right now, and then let's come back and let's talk about we got to have Two Chairs.
Yeah.
Two Chairs and Create Church, and we got to do that. Man, we're taking a lot of your time.
No, I love it.